We always try to provide something that validates a person's experience, and in most cases, we'll also try to provide a certain tip, something for them to think about or something for them to do with their loved one. So it's really intended to be really practical. So even though these messages are short, they're intentionally short because you're going to get them to your phone, and we want them to be focused on one thing and digestible. They really take us quite a bit of time and thought to craft them well.
This is the Dishing Doulas podcast with Joanne Hahn and Karen Hendrickson of Death Doula Network International, changing the world's approach to death and dying, one conversation at a time. Seriously, let's talk. Whether you're an end-of-life professional, a family caregiver, or you simply want to gain comfort with end-of-life matters, we're here to help expand your comfort with our shared mortality, end-of-life planning, and the important conversations. The views shared in this podcast are solely those of the hosts and our guests and are provided for information purposes only. Be sure to consult with your own healthcare and legal professionals for any personal medical or legal advice.
We are really pleased to have Vanessa Callison-Birch with us today. Vanessa is a Silicon Valley product manager with the heart of a hospice volunteer. As a leader on Facebook's compassion team, she was the product manager responsible for shaping how Facebook cares for the accounts of people who have passed away. She has a BA from Stanford University and additionally graduated from Upaya Zen Center Buddhist Chaplaincy Training Program with a focus in end-of-life care. Vanessa is excited to continue to explore the intersection of technology and compassion by supporting the Help Techs team as head of product. Welcome, Vanessa. We're so excited to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us. Tell us a little bit about how you ended up where you are and the work that you do for Help Techs.
Sure. It's wonderful to be with both of you. I am the head of product at Help Techs, which is a company providing text-based grief support. And my background is both in tech as my career and then also in hospice. So I was a hospice volunteer starting now decades ago when I was in high school. And as I know both of you can imagine, that shaped me very much as a person and how I see the world and the kind of work that matters to me. So I feel very fortunate to be working in this intersection now of technology and death and dying and bereavement. And prior to Help Techs, I was at Facebook, where I was leading the team working on memorialization, which is how does Facebook care for the accounts of people who have died.
I would say that certainly here in Canada, the idea that you would have been a teen volunteering in hospice or a young adult volunteering in hospice would be quite unusual here.
It was unusual at the time. I think it probably still would be, but I had volunteered in some nursing homes and really enjoyed that work and then learned about hospice. And there was just a draw that I just really wanted to do that. And I'm forever grateful to the hospice team in my little hometown hospice in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada mountains in California that answered my phone call and then said, we've never had a teen volunteer, but let's try it. Let's see what happens. You'll probably feel like people's granddaughter. And I think that is how things worked out. I also got my older brother to do the training with me, so he could drive. I couldn't. class for the 40-hour training or whatever it was back then. And then did some volunteering together too, which was really sweet. And it's something that I kept doing through college and then off and on since then. Most recently, when I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area with what used to be called Zen Hospice Project and is now called Zen Caregiving Project.
Wow.
What a great thing, though, to have a younger person and the hospice client can look at you as a granddaughter, because some of them may not have had grandchildren and they probably were able to relate to you on a different level than they would somebody that was maybe their own age. I think that's great. They should allow that more.
Certainly shifts your orientation of how you see life when you're a teenager or even in your 20s, you know, and having the opportunity to sit with people at their bedsides as they're dying.
Pretty courageous, actually, as a young person. Courageous to feel that calling or that desire to do the work and actually step into it. Many young people wouldn't necessarily be so brave. So that's awesome. Yeah.
Young people don't like talking about death. Old people don't like talking about death either.
It's just some of us who, for some reason, do like talking about it, which is why I appreciate the community that you two have built, you know.
You can't shut us up.
Let's talk about
it. Sometimes that's the truth. Yeah. So, Vanessa, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how HelpText came to life with Emma Payne.
So Emma is the founder of HelpText and my manager, and just overall a really wonderful, brilliant human who also has this combination of technology background and personal bereavement experience. And she will say she's not a bereavement expert, but honestly, at this point, I feel like she understands the topic really deeply. So I appreciate her humility. And I also want to give her credit for the work that she has put in into learning this area. So years ago, her husband died by suicide. And then a few years later, she cared for her dear friend, who was also that husband's cousin, as he was dying. And then after he died, she went to the funeral, which was in their mutual hometown. And then all kinds of people came up to her and said, oh, we're so sorry we weren't there for you when your husband died. We didn't know what to say. And so the way she tells the story, she was on the plane ride home from that event and on probably the cocktail napkins on the plane was fleshing out this idea for this product that could provide grief support, but especially provide coaching to people who didn't know what to say and how to show up for someone. So HelpText does both. It directly supports someone who's grieving. And then there's an option to add in a few people who want to support you, but don't necessarily know how. And then we send tips and guidance and reminders of important dates to those folks to help them really be there in a way that's beneficial to the person who's grieving.
Yeah. You know, it's unfortunate when people don't know what to say, they stay away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even something awkward is better than saying nothing, but even better is when someone has some guidance on how to be there. And even just to say, I'm not sure what to say, but I'm here for you. And, you know, not let me know if I can do anything, but hey, I'm going to be going to the grocery store tomorrow. Please send me your list. I'd love to drop things off at your doorstep. You know, just these things that help guide people toward being understanding and kind in the way I think we all actually want to be. But when we can get the awkwardness out of the way, at least I hope we all want to be. I'm going to stick by that. I think we all do at the heart of it. You know, we want to show up for our friends and our family members. And the things that we haven't yet really looked at or experienced can feel really awkward. And so our goal is to just really help people to express their support and their care.
Yeah. So really then the common challenges that the grievers face and the gaps in their support, is it because they don't know what to say?
I don't know if it's, I would broaden that a little bit too. I think there's a challenge around grief literacy more generally. So from my perspective, the intensity and the duration of grief when it's a loss that's of someone really dear to you is maybe hard to understand until you have experienced it. And even then, all of our experiences will be unique. So helping both the person who's grieving to understand that what they're experiencing is normal, that grief is not just a feeling of sadness, but it's this whole body experience. So the physical manifestations of grief are there. You might have grief brain where you're confused and forgetful more so than you used to be. And it can last a really long time, as I know you both fully understand. And so helping people understand their own grieving process and then helping people understand it so that they can be supporting someone over time would help solve that challenge of people not really having the support they need. You know, people will show up in the early days, they'll be thinking about it, it's still top of mind for them. And then maybe 3 months in or so, people have gone back to their own lives and it's not so much top of mind. But if you're the one who lost your spouse or your parent or your child or someone really dear to you, it's still very fresh for you. And so having people remember to really check on you and continue to support you matters a lot.
Even too, I guess, as a griever, we have a lot of these false expectations that society sort of imposes on us. We hear a lot about the 1 year, get through the 1 year. It's the hardest. And yet many people who have had this kind of experience, a lot losing somebody really important to them, will often tell you that it's year two that's actually worse than year one. And yet this sort of lack of awareness or understanding as a society with respect to grief and how it manifests and the experience is actually like limits us in relation to, am I not doing this grief properly? What's wrong with me? All of those things, right? And so.
So that validation of people's experience and accompanying them over time matters so much. So if people have the means and a good therapist and can have that support, that's really wonderful. I sort of see help text as a complement to other forms of support that people are able to get, or if they aren't accessing other forms of support, like grief groups and things like that, then it can be something that accompanies them on their journey. So people get a couple of texts each week and then additional messages on things like their birthday, the birthday of their loved one, the death anniversary, holidays that they've said are important, because I know you know holidays are very tender time.
So what is it about help text and the concept of it and the way it offers and provides support that makes it unique compared to any other type of grief support that I might access?
So this is probably the technology nerd in me coming out a little bit, but what I really love about it is that I feel like it is a scalable way to provide grief support that could be part of a public health model for bereavement care. When people need support, it's as easy as signing up. Sign up takes a few minutes. They answer questions, their name, their birth date, so we know how old the person who's grieving is, some information about the person who died, what your relationship to them was, how they died, that sort of thing. And then we're able to send out texts that are personalized. So not everyone gets the same body of texts, and every text says, hi, Karen, or hi, Joe, or if you were the subscriber. And then we'll refer and use the name of your loved one who died, and we'll be selected for you based on that information you provided. So if you're in those very early days of grief, we'll speak to that acuteness. If you're signing up a few years after, we might speak to that point that you were making earlier, Karen, about how people sometimes think they're going to feel better after year one, but year two is actually often the hardest for folks. So trying to really speak to the experience, making it personalized while also being scalable. As many people as sign up can receive the support. It's because it's one way, it's not two-way therapy, so it's not dependent on having people available to answer everyone's replies. Although we do have a wonderful subscriber support team that does reply when people do need a little extra support and resources. And then the other things that I really appreciate about help texts are that we developed our content in collaboration with tons of expert contributors, as we call them. So we find people who perhaps specialize in a certain kind of loss, like sibling loss, for example, or the death of a child. And then we'll work with them to craft texts that will go to people who are experiencing that kind of loss and grief. So right now we have more than 75 folks who've partnered with us and contributed. It's just really wonderful. So it's deeply experts guidance distilled into these couple of sentences that come straight to people's phone. You know, there's nothing to install. There's no app. It's just right there in your text messages, which I think for most of us feel like a very personal space and a space where you are naturally open to receiving support. And it's really easy. You know, there's nothing you have to do beyond that first sign up. And there's just the support comes to you. And then that other thing that I really appreciate about it is this idea of duration. So most of our subscriptions are 12 or 13 months. So people get that support for that entire year from the time that they start, which encompasses all those anniversaries, birthdays, holidays, things like that. And then some folks choose to renew and continue for a second year. And we've even had a few folks continue for a third and even a fourth year.
Wow.
And we're sending new content in those additional years. So at this point, we have a pretty large body of high quality grief content to be sharing with folks.
So that actually really speaks to the value and the benefit that people are receiving if, in fact, they are renewing for year two, year three.
Yeah, and that it's also important to us to feel like we understand the value that we're providing. So one of my first projects when I joined a couple of years ago was to finish building out our survey tool so that partway into people's subscriptions, we can just send them a little text survey that invites them to answer a few questions about How helpful do they find the messages? Do they feel more supported in their grief? And then an open-ended one, which is probably my very favorite, because then people just give us their comments. And we get really high response rates to that survey. So lots of people respond, even though we just prompt them once, don't ask them a second time. And we get ratings of, you know, 4 and 5, like top of the scale of how helpful it is and how supported people feel. 95% of people give us those top ratings. And then we get to see the themes in the feedback, and people are telling us how things felt so well timed. They so appreciate the tips and they're trying them and just really feeling like that support is there for them and is helpful and constructive. So it means a lot. And
how often do the texts come out?
People get 2 texts a week, a few more in the first 2 weeks, and then they get additional texts if that particular week it happens to be one of those special dates, the birthdays, anniversaries, holidays.
Do you find in your experience with your users or your clients, I guess, I don't know what you will call them, but that in fact, they actually probably embrace this idea that it's support that they don't have a requirement to respond to. They can sort of embody or sit with it when they choose to do so. And there's a bit of almost a bit of anonymity to that. So I'm getting the support, but I don't have to engage with anybody to receive it. It's providing me with some guidance. And that's easy for me to navigate in my grief versus this wanting, even people with good intention who are trying to connect with you personally, sometimes that's too much for a griever too.
Yeah. So I do think that's a very helpful aspect of it. So when folks aren't feeling up to making it to the grief group or showing up in person, they can still be receiving this form of support and guidance and encouragement for continuing on their grief journey. Yeah, we do hear that a lot. We also get really high ratings from men. I don't always share this because I don't like to be gendered in my thinking, but I do appreciate that men give us, our ratings are high, as I mentioned, overall in those survey responses, but men give us even higher ratings of appreciating the support.
Yeah, men grieve differently than women do. And quite often, they don't reach out for help or support. But having that anonymity, kind of word, that having the anonymity makes it easier, I think.
Yeah. One of my favorite stories is about a man who received a help text subscription for himself after his father died. And at first he was like, oh, you know, I don't know if I need this, or I don't know if this is, if I really even want this, but someone had gifted it to him. So he signed up and tried it out. And now anytime one of his friends has a major loss, he buys a gift subscription for them because it just meant so much to him and he just felt the value of it.
Yeah, I think for men, there's a couple of things. Definitely they grieve differently, but also there's this, again, this societal expectation of this being stoic and not really having the permission, quite honestly, right? They don't really publicly necessarily get the permission to grieve. So that would be helpful for them for sure.
No, that sparks a little idea for me, separate from the way men grieve in particular, but this idea of society's expectations kind of brings to mind the idea of disenfranchised grief or, you know, kinds of grief that don't necessarily get that same kind of acknowledgement. And so two of those in my mind are pregnancy loss for the person who is pregnant and also their partner and perhaps even the people who would have been grandparents and things like that. People grieve pregnancy losses really deeply, but we don't talk about it enough, in my opinion. And I feel like I'm starting to see more conversations about people's losses and support for that, but it just isn't acknowledged in the same way as if your child who was living died or another family member died. So we recently, last year, launched a new product specifically for pregnancy loss.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a similar way, we launched one for pet loss. I don't know if either of you have dogs or cats or other critters in your life, but for a lot of us who do, it's just so much part of, they're so much part of the family and you care for them for their whole lives. And then when they die, it's a really intense grief that we feel. And so that's another kind of somewhat disenfranchised grief that we wanted to be able to support people through because people had been requesting it. They're trying to sign up for help texts saying, oh, but in this list of 50 plus relationships, you don't have, this was my pet or my, you know, right. my dog or my cat. So sometimes people would do it anyway and they would, you know, list it as their child. But we wanted to be like, get this actually right. And you can tell us what kind of animal it was and how it died, because we might add extra support around if you had to make that tough decision around euthanasia and things like that. Yeah. So those are two of our new offerings that we launched last year.
I think one piece that gets lost in this appreciation of pet loss for those that don't have pets is the reality that your pet, in a lot of cases, actually is with you even more than a partner or other family member, because they're typically always present in the home. Whereas your family and your partner, you're doing all these life things, but your pet is always there. Always, right? It can be so significant for people. I think that's awesome that you guys are doing both of those, actually. I think it is really sad to be witness to individuals who experience pregnancy loss. And again, the societal expectation of, well, you know, try again, have another, do whatever, right? All that stuff. So it's so responsive to the need that's out there. That's great. Yeah, really great.
Like trying to fill a gap, right? Like trying to offer expert bereavement support for scenarios where people might not even have the other access to the bereavement groups or the things that are might be available for different kinds of loss.
Yeah. So what does it offer that other grief resources don't offer, other than the pet loss and the pregnancy loss? There's some out there, but not a lot.
I really see it as complementary to other forms of grief support. So people being in communities of grievers that have shared a similar kind of loss can be really helpful. We actually recommend to people to find a group of people who have had a similar kind of loss, or, you know, having therapy or grief groups or reading books, like whatever people want to do that they find supportive. I see help texts as complementary to all of that. And then the things that make it different from some of those are just that there aren't really these barriers to support. You know, almost everybody has a phone where they can receive texts, but you might not have a car to get somewhere, or you might not have other things. But being able to receive that support straight to your phone, and then also, as I was mentioning earlier, receiving it for a whole year or more, I think really matters too.
What you could do, though, is on my phone, I've got specific sounds for some texts that come in. So if it plays a little tune, I know that Karen's sending me a note. So I'm just thinking in my head then that somebody could set that kind of an alarm and then know that they've got a text, but they're in the middle of something and just know that I need to read that later.
Yes, I love that idea. We have had, I can think of one story of a teenager who was receiving help texts, and she gave us the feedback that she knew they came at noon. So right now we send them all at noon in people's local time. Maybe later we'll give options, but at the moment they arrive at noon. So she knew they would come. She so appreciated them, but she would wait to read them till she was out of school.
Yeah, because you don't want to read a text and burst into tears when you're in the grocery store.
Yeah. I like your suggestion. Give us a ringtone.
Notifications, Can you share with us a little bit about this other element of help texts, which is really about helping supporters of grievers? So as an example, I have three cousins whose mom passed away a couple of years ago now. And one of the challenges with a couple of them was that their husbands felt quite helpless with respect to how to support. And so can you share with us what that looks like in the way of help tech support and the difference that it can make?
Yeah. So let's say if one of your cousins had signed up and was a help tech subscriber, she would be receiving messages. She or he would receive messages for the year, get a couple of messages each week, like we've talked about, and then could invite the husband to receive our supporter messages as part of that same subscription. So he would sign up himself and then start receiving messages that would be personalized based on his relationship, in this case, a spouse. We also ask his relationship to the person who died, because we recognize, too, a lot of the people who are supporters are also themselves grieving.
Right.
But since they're signing up in the capacity of supporter for the person, then the texts come once a week and they are tailored to grief literacy. So helping people understand if your spouse is going through this right now, this is normal. This is part of the grieving process. These are what these things look like. And then providing specific tips of thoughtful things that they can do or say. And something that we've gotten a lot of positive feedback on too is the reminders of dates. You know, it may probably, well, I don't, won't make any assumptions, but if you're in the same household, you maybe would remember those big milestone dates, like the birthdays and the anniversary of the death date, but you might not. And certainly a friend maybe might not remember your mom's birthday, for example, in the way you would, but getting a nudge that, hey, this would have been her mother's birthday, for example, and why don't you reach out? And here's the kind of thing that you can say or do. And like to a husband, we might suggest perhaps doing something that honors the person who died in a way that the grieving person will appreciate. Like maybe you go to the person who died's favorite restaurant or another place that they love to speak about them and honor that relationship and their significance in the person that is grieving's life.
So actually offering up specific suggestions then on what they can.
Suggestions and even scripts. Like we try to be really specific. Like you might say something such as, and then give people the words so that then they can rework them a bit if they want to, but they have a starting point.
Yeah. That's so good. That is so good.
It's really practical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, quite often people don't know what to say. So give them a little bit of a nudge. Here's a suggestion.
Leaves them with the feeling that they are actually being helpful. They've got this expert guidance coming into them with the help text. They're responding to it, acting on it. So they're feeling more confident in what they're doing. And then their person that they're supporting actually would feel more validated and seen in their grief or whatever is happening for them at that particular point in time around this loss. Wonderful. Exactly. So wonderful.
Yes. But I'm curious about if you have statistics on the users. Are there more men, more women? Are they older? Are they younger? Do you have any stats like that?
We do. We do have more women than men. But as I mentioned, the men that we do have signing up give us our highest ratings of support. And then we also have data around age and then the kind of losses that people have had. So we have a pretty good mix of ages. We work primarily with organizations that are serving grieving people. So some hospices were our first clients. We also work with tissue banks. So you can imagine that's a whole different kind of loss than a death through hospice. If someone died suddenly and their loved one became an organ or tissue donor, and those organizations provide grief support to the family members. So we have a whole span of ages, a whole range of kinds of loss. But I guess a lot of people grieving their parents sometimes, and cancer deaths, is our largest type of death. But we really try hard to get specialized so that we can, in each subscription, speak to the kind of loss that people had. And when it's a traumatic or sudden loss, for example, we want to be really sensitive to that, speak to it in certain texts, but also just we're always thinking in every text that we compose, does this make sense for which of these different groups of people, so that each text they receive feels thoughtful and makes sense. And
it feels personal versus robotic. So
Well, we'd say something different to someone whose loved one died from cancer than we would to someone who died in an accident or in a homicide or by suicide or something.
Right.
Well, I mean, a lot of the texts are the same because the grief at core is similar, but when we speak specifically to nuances of those loss where we're thinking about type of death, we're thinking about people's age, you know, is this a young person? We even have a teen series of texts for the times when we have young people signing up.
And so this would be where you call on all this team of advisors and experts that Help Text works with, that actually helps guide the creation of your product and the specialized ways to support these various types of loss or these individuals, right? So can you tell us a little bit more about that sort of expert team?
Yeah, I thought you might ask. Call out specific people. There are so many wonderful folks. I know we added our caregiver product, and I know you two both know Barbara Carnes a lot. And so she was a really wonderful contributor to our caregiver series, of course, since she's been supporting hospice families for quite a long time. But then, as I said, we have 75 more folks. So I would really just invite people who are listening to go to our website, which is helptext.com. And then there's an expert contributor section, which you find the link in the footer, and then just explore. And I'd love if it's folks, imagine the folks who will be listening to this podcast are often working in this field themselves. And I just, it's kind of fun to see how many people you recognize in that list. It's a lot of those, a lot will be familiar faces. You've been in the area of death and bereavement care for a while, but then some of them might be new to you, and you can read about people's bios and see them based on the area, the areas of expertise that they have.
So HelpText introduced a special resource for the health and care professionals too. Do you want to tell us just a little bit about how that was inspired and how it is helpful for them?
Yes. So this was actually the first additional product beyond our original core grief product that we built. And partly it was inspired by the clients that we work with, who are often healthcare providers, hospices or other healthcare providers, hearing about the levels of stress and fatigue and burnout that their staff were experiencing. And so we thought, let's provide a wellness and resilience tool for healthcare workers that also weaves in this grief literacy content, knowing that we also ask them when they're signing up how often they experience death in their workplace and what kinds of deaths they see. So if there's someone who would be communicating with family members after someone's death, giving them more of this coaching and like, here's the kinds of things you can say to really have people feel seen and heard by you and to have that experience, as well as trying to build their own sense of wellness. Because as I can only imagine, since I'm not working in the field of healthcare, like the last 5 years or so through from the pandemic and then beyond were an incredibly intense time for folks. We also acknowledge we want to be really careful to not be like, you're responsible for feeling better. Like you're responsible for your own burnout. We do try to acknowledge right from the beginning that we recognize that the systems that shape healthcare, particularly in the US, are larger forces than any of us can control. And there's complexities to that. There's moral injury involved in that when you want to provide a certain kind of care and you're unable to for a whole myriad of reasons. So we really tried to think deeply and speak to these hard experiences, which is really what we do best, in my opinion. Since we started with grief, you know, we speak to the heart of the matter and go really deep on issues that are challenging.
Quite often, I think we forget that our healthcare workers grieve as well.
Absolutely.
They get to know their patients, some on a very intimate level, because people tell strangers more than they sometimes tell people that are close to them. You know, right. We look at the doctors and nurses and go, you guys deal with this every day. I'm sure you're resilient to it. But they're not. They're human.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so adding one more option of support for them is something that I'm really glad we're able to do.
I think it's so incredibly important in these times of healthcare. So even within Canada, there are a lot of gaps and fractures in our social healthcare system. And there's a lot of moral distress that healthcare providers are experiencing. So fabulous, just fabulous. And so do you want to tell us then a little bit more about the caregiver component? Because again, that's a whole nother area of need. And so what does some of that look like?
Yeah, it's another adjacent area to the grief support that we were providing. So the idea of anticipatory grief that we experience when we are aware that someone we love is coming toward the end of their life. And for me, I really love this product. I think it's my hospice roots, you know, having gotten to sit with hospice families for many hours over the years. And so to be able to provide support to that person who's in that role of caregiving for someone in the last 6 months of their life was really important. So it's education about what the dying process looks like, delivered in these little bite-sized pieces, as well as support for their own wellness and resilience. And then it's tailored based on the kind of illness of the person that they're caring for. So if someone has dementia and Alzheimer's, we speak to what that can feel like as a caregiver. And then we have a transition to our grief product. So actually, before we have the transition to the grief product, we do invite people to let us know when the person is actively dying or within the last couple of weeks of their life. And then instead of two text messages a week, we switch the cadence and they're getting a daily message. And it's really speaking to those last days and what you might be seeing and experiencing and how to be as fully present as you can and feel knowledgeable and supported in that most precious of times. And then when the person dies, we naturally flow into the grief texts once they let us know.
So a lot of that then that's offered up to the caregiver is more about alleviating fear and creating awareness and understanding and suggestion, I guess, with respect to how what things that they can be doing with their person. Am I hearing that right?
Yes. And actually, you've kind of got our formula there. You figured it out. So we always try to provide something that validates a person's experience. And in most cases, we'll also try to provide a certain tip, something for them to think about or something for them to do with their loved one. So it's really intended to be really practical. So even though these messages are short, they're intentionally short because you're going to get them to your phone and we want them to be focused on one thing and digestible. They really take us quite a bit of time and thought to craft them well. And those are the kinds of things we're asking ourselves, like, is the tone right? And is this providing something constructive that really helps this person in this scenario?
And then you remind people too that what they're going through is the normal process.
Yes. And I think that's a huge part of the benefit, just to validate people's experience. And in cases where they might feel unsure, just what a relief to have someone tell you it is normal. If you are feeling this way, this is an experience that many people who are grieving have.
It's okay that you're not okay.
Yeah.
Like Megan Devine is one of your, I think one of your, you know, your advisors as well. Yeah.
One of our earliest expert contributors. And we've been very grateful to get her guidance and input and also have her recommend it so that people who are part of her community of grievers also sign up for help texts.
It's a unique way. Right? I've not heard of this from anybody else.
So we were actually the first company in the world, as we say, to publish data about text-based grief support, grief-informed texting. So there aren't a ton of people doing it, and we just wanted to help people to, first we wanted to know truly for ourselves, is this effective? Do people find value in this, which they do based on the feedback, the survey responses, and then also how long they keep receiving the texts? 86% of people stay for that whole full year or more, because it's very easy to opt out. You just type stop. And people know that right at the get-go, but most people find value and continue to receive the texts. But yeah, I just really want people to understand this is a valid addition to the kinds of grief support that can and should be available to people.
I think, you know, if we step into full transparency here, which is kind of how Joe and I flow, we met Emma in February of 2020 when we were in Seattle at a conference and she was there. And we were just learning about this concept and this idea. It was just coming, sort of just starting to grow, I guess, the beginnings of its legs or what have you. And there was a part of us at that time that was like, geez, I don't know how you do this. How can you do this by text? It seems so, not knowing what we know now, but at that time, kind of thinking, this seems kind of cold and robotic. So how can it be supportive? And so it's been really quite intriguing for us to watch as it has expanded and grown over these years and to actually hear people talk about how valuable it has been and then also gain more of an appreciation around some of these other elements like we talked about today. The anonymity, the fact that I can control what I do with it when I do something with it. The fact that if I choose, you'll also invite my husband or my friend to participate in the process so that they can then learn themselves, in some ways get some support themselves, because I think it's distressing for a supporter to not know what to do too. That will also benefit me. It today feels so much more all-encompassing than that initial reaction 4 years ago. So, yeah.
I think we both looked at our phones when we heard about it, went, interesting concept.
Yeah.
I'm not a tech person. So if somebody says, I'm going to start sending you texts, it makes me uncomfortable. But what you offer, though, is unique. And I love the fact that it's a one-way communication where I get something and I don't have to respond. I think that's great. Yeah.
And the fact that you've done the research and you're relying on these advisors and this expert panel to give you guidance from the perspective of personal need and personal experience. So the whole structure and approach to it all, and the fact that you've built up these other components with respect to caregivers and healthcare professionals and specifics related to pet loss or pregnancy loss, all of these things weave in the humanity of it all, right? And the true intention of it all versus this robotic chat, what is that, chat GPT kind of spit in your face kind of stuff. It's just, it feels so different and intentional. And I think it's just an amazing resource and tool. And this sounds really crazy, but I'd almost say I can't wait to have to need it one day.
You're right. It does sound kind of crazy. But it's great to know it's there.
I do.
That's what I mean, right? Like from that perspective.
That is inevitable. And we are all very likely to be grieving at some point.
So after all of that, what do you believe is most important for people to know about HelpTex and this resource?
I feel like I've said so much already. I think I would just encourage people to keep it in mind for themselves if they're grieving or if they're looking for a thoughtful sympathy gift. I think it's a wonderful thing to provide, or in my ideal scenario, it's provided through organizations. So, you know, if hospices purchase it for the bereaved families that they support, then it's free to those families. We actually did a rollout with Sue Ryder in the United Kingdom, which is a large bereavement charity there. And so it's available, thanks to them, to anyone in the UK who would want it. So yeah, just keep us in mind and keep mm-hmm.
And so do you have hospices within the U.S. that you're in partnership with that are offering this up to their clients?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there was our very first client and partner years ago before I even joined, when it was Emma getting started with the company. And then there have been several more since then.
I'm curious as well, too, your reference to the tissue banks and organ donors. That doesn't belong here, but I've got a personal attachment to that cause. And I know after we're done today, I'll be sending off help text information to a couple organizations that I have some involvement with around those things as well, too. Yeah. Just because it is an important resource that I think certainly here in Canada, more organizations could be offering up and sharing to their patients or their residents, or however they define those that they're in service to.
But it's a great compliment, because I know our hospice here offers grief and bereavement support, but there's also a waiting list of something like 3 to 4 weeks.
Yes.
So you, in the interim, you could be getting these texts of support and help, as opposed to sitting at home and watching the calendar days go by.
Exactly. And so it's supportive to the people who are grieving, and then it also has the potential to be enormously supportive to the grief counselors whose wait lists are long, which is not folks who work in that profession don't want to say no, you have to wait a month, you know, your person just passed away, but I'm overloaded. So giving them something to offer feels beneficial all around.
And even from the basis of accessibility, and I think you might have talked about this already, but you know, not everybody has the means to be able to access private counseling support or therapy support or even some paid grief program support, which might get them in a little bit sooner, but they don't necessarily have the financial means themselves to be able to make that happen too.
And also in terms of accessibility, language support. So we deliver the text primarily in English, but we do offer 20 additional languages. So there are lots of people receiving them in Spanish and French. And then we have a long tail of additional languages that different organizations have asked us to support. So we have that option.
I'm excited now. I want to learn more.
So how can people connect with you and learn about this fabulous resource we call HelpTex, Vanessa?
LinkedIn and Instagram are great ways to follow our HelpTex account. There's also our website, helptex.com. There's a contact form if anyone has a specific thing they want to reach out about. And then I also wanted to tell everyone listening about a specific link if they're considering signing up or offering a gift, helptext.com/DDININT, which stands for the Death Doula Network International, will give people a $10 discount on the subscription.
We appreciate you.
Oh, it is DDININT.
Yeah, we appreciate you extending that out. Thank you for doing that.
Any final comments, Vanessa, before we close off our session today?
Just a lot of gratitude, you know, to you both for starting and continuing all the work that you've been doing. I was reading both of your bios and just really touched by your stories. And I imagine the folks who are listening are involved in similar ways, or maybe they're grievers themselves and currently looking to learn more. But just so much appreciation for people who have these really important conversations and become the ones who can ourselves offer support in a kind and compassionate way to the people that we love, to ourselves when we're grieving, and then also educate others on how to do that. In my ideal world, everyone understands grief, and then everyone, when we're grieving, is supported by a caring family, friend group, coworkers. Everyone just gets the support and care that they deserve. We're a little way off, but we're going to keep doing our part too.
One conversation at a time. You know, a major part of our role as end-of-life doulas is providing resources. And this is a resource that people need to know about. Yeah.
It can change the trajectory significantly for someone who's in the midst of their grief journey. So thank you for the work that you do. Thank you to Anna Payne for being brave enough and creative enough and responsive enough to recognize the value and the importance of this on a plane ride back home. And we can't wait to see what else you guys create in your offering as things go on. So thank you, Vanessa, for your time.
Thank you both so much.
Be sure to catch the next episode of the Dishing Doulas podcast and more at www.ddninint.com. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. You can send any questions or comments to admin@ddninint.com and connect with us at Death Doula Network International on both Facebook and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening to the Dishing Doulas podcast, where we're changing the world's approach to death and dying, one conversation at a time.